Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
So we trained machine learning algorithms to basically diagnose the amount of leakage, severity of leakage, and presence or absence of leakage. And we found that AI algorithms were really good, even better than experts in analyzing the images and diagnosing the leakage and vasculitis.
Today, Dr. Zhu and Imami join the podcast to discuss the 2026 Macular Society meeting, New Developments for Retinal Diseases, in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Glenn Yu. I'm a professor of ophthalmology at the University of California, Davis, here in Sacramento, California.
And I'm Parisa Imami. I'm an associate professor of ophthalmology, also at the University of California, Davis, here in Sacramento, California.
Welcome back to the next part of our discussion on the 49th Annual Macular Society meeting. So let's move on to a new area, like, let's say, new technologies and imaging. I know that you're like a big expert in ocular imaging, as well as a lot of advances like artificial intelligence. So maybe tell us more about some of the studies that you heard about in terms of imaging and AI.
Yeah, there were a lot of newer data and newer studies on different type of imaging modalities that we use, and the use of the previous imaging modalities that we used in the past, but newer methods and newer biomarkers in those imagings. One of the very interesting studies and interesting lectures that I heard was Amani Fauzi's Green Award lecture. So she was basically looking at the perivascular pericytes in patients with diabetic retinopathy and looking at the amount of leakage, fluorescein angiography leakage in these patients, and trying to correlate the number of those pericytes with the amount of leakage that the patients had. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting because if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, but this is not normally what we look at when we see our patients in the clinic, when we evaluate the imaging that we have. So she basically showed that the number of pericytes was negatively correlated with the amount of fluorescein angiography leakage. And they tried to correlate those findings with the patient's systemic findings, including nephropathy. And that was one of the interesting talks, because now we are connecting eye with the rest of the body, which we know that everything is connected.
So actually, that's a good segue, because you're the expert at inflammation and leakage. So maybe tell us a little bit about your talk at the Macular Society.
So I see a lot of uveitis patients in my clinic, mainly posterior uveitis, and mainly the patients with a lot of retinal vasculitis and retinal leakage. One of the issues that we are having in managing these patients and dealing with these patients is that we have to do fluorescein angiography. FA is the gold standard in diagnosing retinal vasculitis in these patients. But as you know, it is time consuming. It takes a good 20-25 minutes to do the study from start to finish. We are dealing with a lot of pediatric patients in whom you cannot easily administer IV FA, and you have to do oral FA with variable efficacy in these kids. And also, it's not feasible to do it every couple of months in these patients. It slows down your clinic and all of these things. But we do have other imaging modalities like OCT and ultra-wide field fundus pictures, which are non-invasive and quick. So we wanted to see if these imaging modalities carry the same information, enough information for us to tell the patient that, hey, you have leakage, your leakage improved, your leakage is getting worse. Mm-hmm. So we trained machine learning algorithms to basically diagnose the amount of leakage, severity of leakage, and presence or absence of leakage. And we found that AI algorithms were really good, even better than experts in analyzing the images and diagnosing the leakage and vasculitis.
Yeah, that's always scary, the idea that AI can potentially take over all our jobs. So one of the things that I found was also interesting. So at the Macular Society, I also gave a talk on other technologies like suprachoroidal imaging. So, you know, actually one of the things that we found in our field was that, as you know, that there's now an FDA-approved treatment for suprachoroidal delivery of triamcinolone acetonide and for the patients with uveitic macular edema. And you've probably given, I know, many of patients with this new treatment, but we don't know where's the drug going, does it work? And one of the things that we described is the ability to actually use conventional, just enhanced depth. Sometimes some people use swept source, but enhanced depth imaging OCT, and was able to see a measurable expansion of that suprachoroidal space And what was really interesting was that what we found was that the patients where you can see that suprachoroidal space expand, actually, it predicted earlier outcome, but worse outcome over the long term. So what we hypothesized is that perhaps patients who have a more open suprachoroidal space, where when you inject the drug, it kind of slides back there very quickly, it might give you an earlier response, but it might not last as long. Whereas if you inject it and it's spread, it kind of like stays out in the periphery and doesn't diffuse back there so quickly, it may not get there in time as quickly, but it might work longer, like longer lasting. It's kind of like your cough medicine. It's either do you want fast acting or long lasting? You can't have both. And so I think it really teaches us a lot about suprachoroidal delivery.
This is interesting because the suprachoroidal delivery is now the hot topic for some of the gene therapy trials, and studies like yours is going to pave the way for better understanding of where the medicine goes and how it works.
Yeah. So one of the other topics I think that was interesting, I feel like, is let's move more toward the basic science. I know every time we get, there's a basic science session at these meetings, you always feel like half the audience are about to like walk out. But I do actually this year, I felt that there were more people than I expected who were attending the basic science session, which was great. One topic I felt really stood out was this concept of omics, like multi-omics, metabolomics, microbiome. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the work on the microbiome or metabolomics?
Yeah, this is a very, very exciting topic because we are moving more towards precision medicine and personalized care for our patients. Some of the talks that were discussed were looking at the microbiome, the gut's microbiome. It was presented by Dimitri Skondra from University of Chicago. So they basically, the whole idea is that there is this gut-eye or gut-brain axis and the gut dysbiosis that can cause inflammation that is related with systemic inflammation can be associated with diseases like macular degeneration. So the team basically looked at the different gut microbiome and gut dysbiosis and tried to associate that and correlate that with different stages of macular degeneration. So I found that very interesting because when patients come to our clinic, they always ask us about the type of diet that they should follow. And the line that we usually give them is just green leafy vegetables. Mediterranean diet is good for you, but we don't have any specifications of what they should or they should not be taking.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. I do think one of the, you know, actually got up and asked this question and was whether, you know, there is definitely an association with gut microbiome and certain stages of AMD. But the question is the correlation because of diet, like maybe certain dietary, people who are on Mediterranean diet are going to have better, you know, less severe AMD, and they probably also have a better gut microbiome. So to what extent is this just an association, like people with better diet have better microbiome and have less AMD? And to what extent is it a real involved, like is the gut actually involved in the pathogenesis of AMD? And I know Dimitri has done some beautiful work in mice where they can do even like fecal transplantation and found that there was an actual integral part, but mice don't also have a macula or have macular degeneration. So I think the extent to which that applies is still a little bit uncertain.
Yeah. Another very interesting study in the world of multi-omics was the metabolomics studies. Mm-hmm. So Debo Hossein presented the metabolomics study looking at solid tissue metabolomes and the in patients with macular degeneration. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So Debo has done a lot of work over the years. She and also Ines Lanes, who's also a Macular Society member. And I remember they presented a lot of work on plasma metabolomics. So this is just taking plasma from patients and looking at whether there's an association of certain metabolites with AMD. And this is the first time where they actually took eye tissues and found that there was similar changes in the materials in the actual eye tissue. So these are obviously cadaveric, so patients have passed away and they collected those eyes. I think that they're very interesting. She actually found that a lot of the glycerol phospholipids, I believe, were also associated, the same features that were associated with in plasma was also in the eye itself. One of the things that I was wondering was whether this just reflects differences like in their makeup again, like is it just like the plasma metabolites leaking into their tissue metabolites? So one thing I would love to have known is whether, for example, whether there's a, like if you can adjust for the plasma metabolites so that you're looking at specifically what's upregulated or downregulated in the eye that's different. But I do think that it it starts to help us understand, as you say, about personalized medicine and maybe your plasma, your peripheral blood does have materials that reflect what's in your eye, and hopefully then we can help guide us toward more better treatment decision-making for our patients.
Please join us for the next part of our discussion on the 49th Annual Macular Society meeting.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my flash briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Yu and Amami. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.